Blog Talk Radio.
Hello? Hello? Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. We're having a little technical problem tonight, but not to worry. Hold on just for 30 seconds, and I will be back with our guest. One moment. And we're getting our guest to come on with us, so just hold on one moment. Hello, Wendy?
Yes.
Hi, it's Bonnie.
Hi, good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours, too, and I'm not quite sure where we're standing with the technical problems we're having tonight.
Okay.
But hopefully everything is well, and
okay.
This is the Straight Wives Talk Show, and this is a show that specializes in women who are in straight women who are involved in marriages to gay or bisexual men. And each week we do hit the hard-hitting issues that women face in these relationships that help marriage partners to move on to a better, saner place in life. So normally we do have call-ins, but unfortunately due to the, you know, problem that we're having technically tonight, we're just going to have our guest Wendy. And hopefully everybody's hearing us fine.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. So if somebody's out there who's listening to the show, and you can just drop me a note at bonk@aol.com just to let me know that you're hearing us, I would really appreciate it. So, Wendy, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
I'm happy to do that. Happy to do that. And it is comforting to know that there may be some people out there listening that I actually know now.
So I know. Some of our women are really excited that you were going to be calling. And actually, I'm sure they are really looking forward to going through your list with you.
My new network of friends.
I was telling some women on our support chat tonight, you know, how wonderful it was to actually have the opportunity to meet you in person.
Oh, well, the feeling is mutual, believe me. It was wonderful.
I know. I think it was a weekend that all of us will remember for a long time to come, if not forever, if I can remember that long.
Yeah, pretty intense, but well worth it.
Yeah, I think that when we have these weekends where we get together, they're always intense. But, you know, I think that we get so much out of them, and just meeting other people who can give us the kind of support that we're looking for, to me, is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It doesn't take long to feel the support and immediately feel that you can disclose what you need to disclose. I hate to say feel love, but that's what it's like.
Uh-huh.
You just, to meet somebody who's been through your situation. I mean, it's been 5 years now since I've been corresponding with you, and this was really the first time to meet. I did meet Lynn last fall, but to really sit down and have a conversation, and I think it made it really real, which is probably why it's given me a little trouble in recovering from the, it kind of dug up some things, but that's always necessary to promote more healing. So.
And I think that you have to go back and revisit that because,
right.
You know, otherwise that part of healing is,
right.
You know, going through things that are painful, right?
Right, right.
You know, it's not always going to be easy.
Right. Right. And it did surprise me a little bit. I thought I had put some things to rest, and I think maybe I just had buried them.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought, you know, it brought it all up again to sit there and tell your story, is even though I've written it and told it to several people now, to go through the whole thing again and again, is healing, but also opens up a little bit of wounds.
Absolutely. And I think that also, you know, a lot of people who are listening probably don't realize that your story is in our book, Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that when people read it and they tell me how much it moved them,
mm-hmm.
you know, more so than a lot of other shows.
Wow.
I mean, more than other stories, that, you know, it's just incredible that, you know, like I say, when people hear it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the women who were in that room who listened to your story, I got so much positive feedback from them.
Wow.
And the people who read your book were just so moved by that story, and not necessarily people there. I mean, I always have people who come to me and say, wow.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about, you know, what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because that weekend when I was probably on the, out of the 14 of us, I was probably 10th, I don't know, 8th or 9th. And so I heard a lot of stories before I had to tell mine, and I kept thinking, wow, I've had it pretty easy compared to a lot of these people. There's a lot of things I did not put up with,
mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, man, I don't know. I don't feel like I've had it that bad. I feel so much worse for these other people. And then when you start telling the story, you realize, yeah, you did have it bad, and you did survive it. So that was good.
Yeah, and I think that no matter how...
I have moved on from some of it, and it's not weighing me down as it did at the time.
Mm-hmm. And I think no matter how, you know, long it is from the time that you lived it,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, there's always so much what I call residual scarring that's left
yeah.
over. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. Definitely, and that's what I'm trying to deal with as I move forward. Always trying to move forward. It's always going to be with me. It's who I am. And so I have to make peace with a lot of it, and I have to, you know, resolve some of the self-talk that I went through during all of that. I've got to readjust all that
mm-hmm.
and start giving better messages to myself
mm-hmm.
And realize that what I put up with, I really shouldn't have put up with, but I did, and so now I need to move on and you know, find the positives in all of this.
Right, and there's always
so important.
I think there's always positives that you can find,
mm-hmm.
although you're hoping that you don't have to find them all. You know, as when you, immediately following it, it's really hard to look back.
Right.
And feel
right.
that.
And I also, I think in what kind of prompted me to do the recovery map is that I didn't want to forget. I didn't want to forget all that I had been through. You know, I don't know why that was important to me, but I just, when I was kind of in the middle of recovery and then I needed to write it all down and go back and go, wow, it makes you realize that you really have come a long way. You actually do. Now, some of these women that are probably just now getting into all this and realizing what a mess they're in
mm-hmm.
are probably thinking, how on earth would I ever forget what I'm going through? But you do, and you move forward, and it was very important to me to get all that written down and so that I could see my growth, because that's motivating to keep moving forward, and that gives you a confidence that you need to go forward on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it is a very life-changing experience with a different twist than just a straight going through divorce.
Right.
So, anyway, that's where I am now, and I know I still have a ways to go, but. I do feel like I have a lot of support, and each time you tell your story, you feel stronger. So that's good.
Okay.
So I'm working on some new stuff.
Well, I don't think this show is going through, Wendy. I'm looking at every app.
Really?
But, and I keep checking, but I don't think that people are hearing it.
Really?
Yeah. They have a new thing. It says upgrade your browser.
And of all times, it comes to you now.
I know. I just am more than distraught, but, you know, I try to, like I say, not overreact to this.
Right. I was going to say, is there somebody you know who'd be listening you can email? My computer is shut down.
Yeah, I just did, you know, well, I mentioned if anybody's listening, but I don't think they can hear it.
Right.
So that's the problem. And I'm not quite sure who's there who would be listening. It's hard for me to say. But
I know, yeah, I know Nancy. I did hear from Nancy. She said she would be. And Debbie as well. But I don't have their...
Yeah, like I say, if any of you are listening to us, if you could just email me at bondk@AOL. Okay, here it is. Let's see, here's somebody. They are listening. Becca, thank you so much. They can hear us.
Oh, good.
Becca, thank you for saving it because we're ready to hang up the phone. I am so sorry, everybody, for that.
Oh, my goodness.
Option. Now that we feel better, now
okay.
That everybody knows. Thank you, Becca.
Hope you're out there, Nancy and Debbie.
Yeah, hang in there, girls. Anyway, so in spite of our technical difficulties, thanks to Becca, we're moving on our way. And
okay.
If anybody has questions to ask Wendy, because you can't call in tonight, unfortunately, you can definitely write to me at bondk@AOL.com, and I'll be happy to send any questions you like over Wendy's way. And let me see, this is a little better because I just got a comment that the volume is low.
Okay,
so I'm taking myself off the speakerphone, and I think part of it is because I have you on the other line here, Wendy, but that's okay.
All right. Well, that's
all right.
Cool.
Blanca, thank you for letting us know that also. And here's another note from Becca. Keep talking. I love you. Thank you, Becca. Same to you. All right. Well, for those people who are still hanging in there with us, we're going to talk a little bit about Wendy's list. And you know, when I first met Wendy a few years ago, Wendy was just in the process. Is that correct, Wendy? You were still together with your husband, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were getting ready to...
I just discovered things on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of such a thing as a gay man marrying a woman. And never dreamed it even existed. And then here I was in the middle of it. And unfortunately, I found you right away on the internet. And we began our conversation. I was so grateful that you wrote me back. So,
yes.
That was 5 years ago.
So that was 5 years ago. You had just found out. You were totally devastated, right?
Yes.
But there was always something wrong in your marriage. Is that correct?
Yes. He was a workaholic, controlling, manipulative, very driven, addicted to success and achievement, narcissistic, had a very... difficult childhood, which I think caused that narcissism, and just very difficult to live with, all about himself.
Now, when you married him, I mean, you were really in love with this man, is that correct?
Yes.
And you
he
really
was
wanted...
He was a good man,
mm-hmm.
good values, was a teacher, of course. I was a teacher, so, you know, I thought that was great, everything on paper looked fabulous.
And you were a religious person, is that correct?
Uh-huh, both Presbyterian. He worked in the church part-time as a church choir director. I was in the choir. That's how we met. He was a little older than I was, but that didn't bother me. I was 26 when we met. He just seemed perfect. Gentleman. A real gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And he was almost 30, which didn't really concern me at the time. He had been engaged at one time. I knew he was very busy, you know, not in a field where he, you know, met a lot of women and was kind of aspiring in his career. So that didn't concern me at all.
Mm-hmm.
No red flags at all. None. Period. None.
Now, when we say there were no red flags, let's try to think back. What year were you married?
I was married in 1985.
Okay.
So I
now,
met
first
him
of
in
all,
84. Yeah.
Back in 1984, 85. First of all, and you lived in Texas, right?
Yes.
And you came from a religious family.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably didn't know much about gay. Is that correct?
Did not. Did not.
Did you consciously know any gay people that you were friendly with?
No. And I really didn't know the whole concept of gay till I went to college and had human sexuality as one of my courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was kind of different and kind of, you know, whatever. I didn't really have any preconceived ideas. I didn't have any judgment. I hadn't been told anything,
mm-hmm.
that it was wrong or what. Nothing. I just thought, well, whatever, you know.
And you didn't outwardly know any gay men, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so it never would have dawned on you that the man who you were marrying was gay, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and were you feeling like anything was off about him in any way or no?
I could tell he was not real experienced, but
mm-hmm.
neither was I, but that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
He was not real flirtatious. But that, I liked that.
Right, he was a serious man.
He was not intimidating. I didn't want him to see how inexperienced I was. So,
mm-hmm.
I liked the fact that he was not aggressive.
And I think that a lot of women find that complimentary in a way.
Yes.
Because they feel like most men are after them for just one thing.
Right. And I wrote that in the story I wrote. I remember writing that I thought he was interested in me as a person and not just physically, which appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved forward. I was infatuated. I just thought this was it.
Even if you thought something was wrong, you thought it was something that was livable or fixable, shall I say?
Right, or that it was just a matter of being inexperienced and
mm-hmm.
that, you know, once things got going, it would be okay. When I look back, there are a few odd things, like he didn't always want to hang around after a date. But I just attribute that to being a serious person and you know, he had to go work at church the next morning and, you know, was taking care of himself and it just...
And he was very busy, right?
Yes, yes.
He had a very busy life, so it was
right.
easy to think that he was continuously,
right.
you know,
right.
obligated to do something.
Right, right. I mean, the fact that he cleared a schedule for me once a week was big.
Exactly. So... There was nothing that would have thrown you off kilter. I think that
no.
a lot of times that people just assume, well, we must have known something.
Right.
Well, we must have known something was not quite right, but we certainly wouldn't have thought it was gay.
Right.
Wouldn't you say
exactly.
that's true?
Exactly. And, you know, I was sort of familiar with the stereotypical type thing of, you know, like some of the celebrity, like Liberace.
Mm-hmm. Or the flamboyant
Elton
gay.
John, you know, that kind of stuff. But he was...
Like gays who were flamboyant that you would see in the press.
Right.
You know, those were the kinds of,
right.
you know, men that we would associate with being gay.
Right. Right. And I certainly wouldn't have thought that someone who was gay would be doing something like this, going out with a woman.
Or marrying her.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that it's really important for women to understand that,
yes.
that as much as we blame ourselves, there is no way that we understand that this is what the situation was.
Right, and I think, looking back, he didn't realize it in himself.
Well,
either.
I was just about to say that. You know,
yeah.
for instance, how would a woman know when the man himself hadn't come to terms with it yet?
Right.
And we may know that something is quite a little bit off kilter, but
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean that we would think it's something gay.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm glad that, you know, we got that straight because
yes.
too many times women think they have to blame themselves for something that's not a blamable thing.
Right. And when I did, you know, when I did find out, I went back, of course, and scoured every moment that I could remember of how did I miss this? You know, I think that's a natural reaction to do that. But I absolutely came up short. I mean, there was nothing. There was nothing.
Mm-hmm. And even if there had been something, you wouldn't have known it anyway.
Right.
Because what did we know? I mean,
right.
like I say, we can't blame ourselves for not knowing this
right.
when the men themselves did not, you know, understand
right.
this.
Right.
So you got married and you had two children, right?
Mm-hmm. Pretty quickly because I was a little older. Yep.
Was this something your husband wanted?
Pardon me?
Was this something that your husband wanted?
Yes. Yes, and he was 30, and, you know, back then, 30 was not what 30 is now. You know, when you're getting to be 30, you need to be having kids, and My sister had trouble having kids. I have another sister who can have kids, so I thought it might take me a while. So, we got going quickly, and within a year, a little over a year, I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then my son was born 3 years later. So, thank goodness that came out of this marriage. Thank goodness. They're the life, they're my life. Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two wonderful, positive things that came out of this marriage that I, I'm grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're not scarred from it all, but, that was a good thing. And he did try to be a pretty good father at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He's really trying now, but,
Well, did he always try?
No. No. He that was one of the things when I was trying to figure out why he, ignored me. I attributed that to myself. That has to be me. And then as the kids got older, I started just seeing the same patterns that he would ignore the kids like he ignored me. And that was kind of enlightening to me. On the one hand, it made me realize, that he has the problem. It's not so much me, perhaps, but it broke my heart to see him acting that way with the kids, too.
Mm-hmm.
We just became lower priority than his other parts of his life.
And what did you attribute that to during the marriage? What were your thoughts?
Well, he was just really, he was up and coming and in his career, and
mm-hmm.
so he became a workaholic, and he just convinced himself and everybody else that he had to, achieve or he was going to lose his job. I remember him telling my dad that once, if he didn't get such a score at a contest that, he could lose his job, and which is absolutely ridiculous. But he really, and he had parents that were extremely pressuring, and so he had to live up to them. And so he just put in hours and hours, working on studying every note of every piece of music. He was a band director, and there was just always a reason he had to be gone on the weekends, and then he had this church job, too, and, it just... Something was always more important than us.
And he was always running, going, and doing, correct?
Yes.
Anything to avoid the marriage.
Yes. And, I would hear about other husbands that sat on the couch, that watched sports all day, or didn't, were not ambitious. And I thought, boy, I'm lucky. I don't have that. He's not like that. He would never sit around on the couch, ever. And so I thought, well, I can't complain. He's out doing, and he did do yard work and things like that.
He would do anything except be home for the marriage.
Right, right.
So asking him to do things wasn't the problem, right?
Right, right. And I became caught up in his success. And so I was raised by a stay-at-home mom, and I just, I was the perfect wife and the perfect mother, and I was there to take care of everything. And I gave and he took, and it kind of worked for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Until, I realized that I wasn't getting anything back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to fade back into the woodwork, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I did then pour myself into my kids and making up for what he couldn't do. I had to go learn to throw a baseball and throw a football and all those things with my son because Dad wasn't home. So that was heartbreaking, but I had to do the best that I could.
So fast-forwarding ahead,
mm-hmm.
How did you first find out?
I was checking the computer history. This was back when, you just had one computer, one household computer, and I had a 16-year-old son at the time, and I had heard things on the news or whatever that, this was before my Facebook and all that, and you need to monitor what your kids are doing on a computer. So I went to the history, and one night, and there before me were gay porn websites. I didn't know such a thing existed, I guess, but there it was on my computer. I was stunned. Stunned. And I just couldn't believe it. And I was disgusted, and it was just awful. And I didn't say anything to anybody. This was at night. I went to bed. I just like, this can't be. So the next night, I made sure, I realized that my son had not been on the computer. I really didn't think it was my son because, I don't know, he was 16, but he had a girlfriend, and, I didn't think it was him. But I had to be sure. So the next night, my son was never on the computer. So I look, and there it is again. So I knew it was him. I knew it was my husband. And, your brain just starts putting all kinds of things together, and, it's just crazy. But I confronted him the next morning, and he just acted like I was nuts. What was I talking about? I said I looked at the history. Oh, I'll tell you, every website that I was on, I will tell you. I'm like, I already know.
Was he acting angry?
Very defensive.
Mm-hmm.
But he's always defensive. He always defended everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make you a list. And he was scrambling. I could tell he was scrambling. I said, come clean with me. He couldn't. He tried to say it was my son doing it. And I said, no, he wasn't on the computer. And he couldn't look at me. I had to just keep badgering him. And then I got to go to work. So then, I just kept bugging him for a few days. And then finally he said, I will write you a letter. I got to go get my thoughts together, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote a letter telling me that, maybe he was bisexual. I didn't believe that for a minute, because if he was bisexual, he would have been interested in me, which he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you ever feel he was?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No. I didn't really know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
But
you were the ripe for the taking for a gay man.
Yeah.
When you have to think about prototypes, and I was trying to explain that to someone today.
Yeah.
Who was a social worker, and I said to her, "You have to understand that these guys, on some level." I'm not saying it's always conscious, maybe it's subconscious,
right. That,
they know that there's something off about them. They know that, they're having feelings that they shouldn't be having.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for loving, wonderful, kind women
mm-hmm.
who are helpers in life. We have a whole stack
mm-hmm.
of our women, as you saw, who were teachers and social workers,
nurses,
all the helping professions.
Yep.
You can't tell me that that's just a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are looking for women who
mm-hmm.
are accepting, caring, nurturing, and who will keep trying to fix things when they know they can't be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I didn't used to feel this way, but I do now, that I think consciously or subconsciously, they really are thinking if they love us that we're going to be able to fix them.
Yes, I do think that.
And that when they're not fixed, then, instead of, like I say, taking personal responsibility for it, they throw it back at us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why can't you fix me? What's wrong with you?
Yep.
But I think they look for women like you, and also, nothing personal, but as you mentioned, since you already mentioned it, you had a lack of sexual experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You were a nice church girl
mm-hmm.
who
mm-hmm.
didn't have high expectations
mm-hmm.
of great sex before marriage.
Right.
I mean, that's not what you were about.
Right.
But that didn't mean you didn't expect it, or hope for it after the marriage.
Right. Right. And I got out of my comfort zone trying to get him motivated, and it was very difficult for me. And, now I think back to it. How dare you put me through that, it was just not my nature to be, the initiator, but there was a piece of me, a human piece of me, that knew what was it was supposed to be like. I don't know, you know, you just, it's an
instinct. You watch movies and you see television, you get some idea,
and you
right?
You have an instinct when you love somebody, you know?
Right.
And you know, and that's when probably a few years into it, I would start trying to figure out what is wrong. What is wrong with this? And, you know, I always, it's something I'm not doing right, because I would hear my other coworkers talk about their men and they couldn't, you know, satisfy them enough. They wanted stuff all the time. And I would sit there and just want to crawl under the table, because nobody ever said what I was feeling. You know, Oprah never had a show about that. It was always the other way. So what am I to think? It's got to be me. There's something I am doing wrong, because every other male, you know, in a marriage is this way, and my husband was this way. So I must be doing something wrong. And I searched. Didn't have internet then. Magazine articles and, you know, library books and just anything I could get my hands on, or some Oprah stuff about relationships, going, what on earth am I doing wrong? And I just never got an answer. So then if you don't get an answer, then you start having to come up with your own answers, and it must be me. I don't look right. I don't smell right. I don't have the right lipstick. I don't have the right perfume. I'm not being enough. And, you know, because I did try to bring it up with him, and he wouldn't, he'd just balk at it. He would just blow it off.
Was he degrading to you anyway, sexually?
No, he was not. I have heard many stories of women that were, the tables were turned on that, and he didn't. It was more an indifference and lack of interest and excuses. But I quickly, I guess I had enough self-esteem to quit trying, because I couldn't take the rejection. So I just quit trying, and it became a silent elephant in the room type thing.
But did getting the word gay still even come through your mind?
No. And I would say probably 20 years in, I would, and when we did go on, I was so humiliated. We didn't have a lot of money, to pay for babysitters. So that was another reason I attributed, we just can't afford to go out, because we can't afford a babysitter. So, but there would be times when my parents would come visit, or we would go visit my parents. They live up in Pennsylvania, so we would go for like a week at a time, or they would come here for a week at a time, and they would say, oh, okay, we'll stay home babysitting. You go down to Galveston for the night, or, you know, or when I was up in Pennsylvania, we would go, and we'd have this whole weekend planned, or, you know, a night planned at least. And I remember two times, once up there and once here, where... Well, here, the one here, we drove all the way to Galveston, an hour and a half, to this hotel, and going to go out to eat and all this stuff, and he gets sick, and we come home. I was so embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
Come home to my parents, you know, late at night, going, and, you know, we didn't spend the night because he didn't feel good. And then the one in Pennsylvania, we get all ready to go. Nope, I just can't go. I was so humiliated. And then the band organization at the end of the year would give him gifts, and they thought I was just a saint for putting up with this workaholic. They would give us weekend trips. Those sat in the drawer, never used. So it was very frustrating, but I never thought that was why. I just thought, he just doesn't want me. He doesn't want me. I'm not lovable. He doesn't want me.
Now, when you finally found the porn on the computer and he was insisting it's not his.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you this. at what point did you realize it had to be his?
Immediately. And then he wrote me the letter saying, okay, yeah, maybe I am bisexual. And I'm like, no, I don't, you know, whatever. And then that's when I found your website and immediately started realizing that there really is no such thing as bisexual. In your opinion, and I happen to agree with you, he finally sort of did come clean. And I said, okay. I immediately said, I'm not going to live a lie. I'm not going to stay married to you. I can't.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't balk at that at all. He agreed. It surprised me. He didn't try to beg for me back. He said, okay. And that was in May, and we were going to go one more school year to, you know, go through all the proceedings. We were going to do it together. It was going to be mutual. We had some really good conversations. He told me some things that his mother had said to him when he was a child. You know, I said, we're still a family. We'll still do family things together. I was the nurturer, helping the victim. And, you know, we were all going to work this out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure you've just discovered this, is what I was telling him. And, you know, I'm sure this is hard for you. You know, I accept you, blah, blah, blah. And I think he was shocked that I didn't throw him out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
But, so he just carried on. And, you know, we both decided that we would not tell the kids. I had to come to grips with it all. I was so shocked. I immediately got in contact with you and started realizing that this was not a rarity that I thought it was, and started immediately getting support.
You know, I think it has to hurt that when you feel rejection from your husband for so many years.
Yeah.
And at that point, it must have been about 15 years, am I right?
Yep.
And no matter what you do, no matter how fast you keep running, you can never catch up to his
right.
rejection.
Right.
You know, he's always two steps ahead of you.
Right.
And that you always, you know, internalize, and this is what I tell my women, this is damage that's done to you.
Yep.
That is not easy to undo.
Right.
It's not just a one-time thing, like if you walk into an office and somebody says, oh, you don't look good today, are you sick?
Right.
And let's say you're not, but you
right.
feel bad that somebody
right.
thinks you look sick. Okay, but the next day they come in and they'll say, oh, you look so much better.
Right.
I mean, this is not how this works.
Right.
This is a slow meltdown and deterioration
this
of how you
is,
feel.
Yeah. This is deep-seated, and I'm realizing now that, you know, I've recovered from a lot. I really have, but
mm-hmm.
that is the piece that is still deeply, deeply hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to take some deep stuff to get over.
It takes a long time. And, you know, it took me a long time. It certainly impacted the, you know, current relationship that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for 18 years now with a man who I'm really madly in love with still
mm-hmm.
after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had our, you know, times of going up and down. I mean, nothing
mm-hmm.
is perfect in life,
mm-hmm.
but this is a man who I truly love and who loves me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he has his own baggage he brought into the relationship, but we really try to work at it because I do believe we're soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is that previous relationship impacted so much of what screwed up in this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because I lived in a distorted kind of a relationship with a gay man,
mm-hmm.
and I carried that over into a relationship with a straight man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the trust issue became so great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can I trust you when you go
mm-hmm.
out? Well,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm just going to the bakery.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, how do I know that? You know, like,
right.
you know, you overreact in ways that,
mm-hmm.
you know, going through this because there's such a lack of trust because the betrayal is so deep.
Yep.
But I think what's even worse is that in a case like yours, because every case is a little different,
mm-hmm.
but every case is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when this man, you know, totally rejected you physically as a woman
mm-hmm.
and made you feel there was something wrong with you
mm-hmm.
for all those years,
mm-hmm.
day in and day out,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to come out and find out that this had absolutely nothing to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
And every day as you sat and you felt bad about yourself, it had mm-hmm. nothing to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you just say to somebody, okay, I'm sorry about that? Like, you know, okay, well, you know, I screwed up. It doesn't work that easily.
No. And it's embedded in my soul. I mean, you know, this is a very slow deterioration over 20 years eroding of my soul and my spirit and my sense of who I am down to nothing. I mean, I was down to nothing. And but even before I knew this, I went through major depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that now when I was sitting there, you know, pretty much suicidal, and he's sitting there saying, and I'm saying, well, I don't know what to do because I can't, you know, you tell me I can't quit my job, but I can't go to work, and what am I going to do? And he said, well, you know, you could go work at a department store. And I was like, really? I can? You know, at that time when I was so at the bottom.
So low.
How dare he not say anything to me?
Exactly.
How dare he not?
How dare he keep you tripped up in his lie? Yeah. He was living his lie.
You know, so I went through all of that, you know, a good year of trying to recover in therapy and medication and all of this when, you know, this whole secret was a huge contributor to my depression.
Right.
And my therapist couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. We spun our wheels for a long time. And, you know, I think about that now, the damage, and because I couldn't even get therapy, I couldn't even get through that because I still didn't know.
Well, how could you go and, you know, have any success at therapy when you don't even know what the problem is that
exactly.
you're dealing with?
Exactly. And my therapist, I could tell she was getting frustrated with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really sense that. And when you're depressed, you don't, and your therapist is upset with you, that's not good.
Mm-mm.
You know? You just feel like you're just such a failure
mm-hmm.
at all ends, every piece of me. And so it's just so confusing because in my job I did well, you know, I was a good teacher. I was successful. I felt I was a very good parent. And so you're just so confused because, you know, am I okay or am I not okay? Or, you know, it was just a total confusion and you get to the point where you're just exhausted and you just don't want to, I just didn't want to go on anymore. I just didn't want to go on. The future looked very grim to me. And that's a lot of, for me, that's what, when you feel suicidal is, you know, the future looks so bad. Why would you want to get up and, you know, live, because it looks so bad and it doesn't look like there's any hope of it getting better. So,
and I think that's how many of us feel, although very few are willing to admit that.
Right.
You know, and certainly I felt that way. You know, I felt so good when you told me that, because I always felt maybe I was overreacting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there was something that was weak in me that drove me to the point that I wanted to either do a suicide or homicide. You know, when I wasn't thinking about killing myself, I was thinking about killing my ex-husband
mm-hmm.
only because I felt so trapped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was so much stronger than I was.
Yeah, and you get to that desperation point, I picture myself in a hallway, at the end of a hallway, and there's all these doors, and I can't open any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, you know, nothing will work, and you do. You feel trapped. Like there's just no way out. There's no way out.
Exactly.
So,
well, the great thing that Wendy did, you know, in spite of all of the struggles that she went through, what she did is really save so many women by being able to articulate these concepts, because of the fact that when we're going through it, we have all these feelings that Wendy writes about in her recovery map,
mm-hmm.
and we
mm-hmm.
all go through different phases, and, you know, we're not quite sure if we're on target or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to women, like, when they say to me, well, people say to me, I should be over this by now, and I'm not. What's
mm-hmm.
wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, there's nothing wrong with you. There's not a timeline
mm-hmm.
on when you should be recovered by.
Right.
And every woman has different experiences, and every woman has a different kind of husband.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes women who have great marriages really actually have a harder time recovering because they
yeah.
really don't understand how something
right.
so great could have gone so wrong.
Right.
Whereas women who are living in marriages where there was not that kind of great bond,
mm-hmm.
you know, they feel a sense of relief at least knowing that, you know, it wasn't them, but it doesn't mean the damage isn't there.
Right.
So your very first map was your mm-hmm. Straight Wives Recovery map.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you had different phases, and you put it into four phases.
Mm-hmm.
Of the first phase was shock and awe, also known as the nightmare I can't wake up from.
Right, and I remember, in fact, I was looking through some old emails to my family, and I, in the beginning, I wrote, you know, it's like you wake up to a nightmare instead of waking up from a nightmare. You wake up, and there is your nightmare. You're living the nightmare.
I love that, Wendy. That really sounds profound, and it's true.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about the little phases that Wendy went through, and but some of them are fluid, wouldn't you say so? Like, just because you think you're out of the first phase doesn't mean you're not going to go back there from time to time.
Right, and I didn't really put this in onto paper until I was probably third into the third phase. So it was written as I looked back. At the time, I didn't think I would ever, you know, you're just putting one foot in front of the other. You're not even talking about recovery. You're talking about survival.
And by the way, I do want to let anybody know who hasn't seen Wendy's list, if you're, you know, a newer listener or not getting, you know, my past newsletters, if you write to me at bondk@aol.com, I'm more than happy to send you a copy of Wendy's list. And it can be your guideline to recovery.
Yeah.
And we're going to go through each of these items now. And in phase one, Wendy, how long do you think you were in phase one?
Well, I have written on here 6 months.
Okay.
And this is one that's just short words because really that's all you can't even think at that point. You're just flitting from one thing to the next. Nothing makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just one word feelings, I guess.
Okay, so can you go through them?
You want me to go through them? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Shock, betrayal, fear, questioning, no trust, clues missed, clues seen, release, confusion, fragile, disbelief, shame, anger, despair, weak, blindsided, no dots to connect, secrecy, crisis, foolish, inadequate to cope, embarrassment, deer in the headlights, can't think beyond the feelings, worry in so many directions, overwhelmed, can't breathe, isolation, so alone.
And I think all of those words, you know, are so perfect. I think if I would add one more word to the list that I went through, because I went through every single one of these, maybe bargaining.
Okay.
Because I know that in my 6 months after I found out, I was always thinking of ways, well, maybe I can live with this. What can I live with? You know, maybe I don't have to give this up. Maybe I can keep my marriage together.
Yeah.
So I think after I went through the initial shock and feeling of betrayal,
you
know, the fear set in. And I think once the fear set in, I started saying, well, what can I live with? You know, do I want to break up this family? I have two little babies. Do I want them growing up without a father? Do I want to have to go out and how am I going to support them? What if something happens? Can I handle, you know, first of all, I had no self-confidence after being wiped away.
Right.
So how would I ever think I could be a single mother to these two little children who were going to be depending on me?
Yeah, I can't imagine having little kids. My kids were older. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, mine were only like 3 months and two and a half years.
Wow.
And, you know, my son was really sick and back and forth to hospitals. And I thought,
oh my goodness.
Can I do this myself? I mean, how am I going to survive? So I started making bargains. Well, maybe I could live with this. Maybe I could live with that. So I think, you know, but I think the best part, that the thing, if I had to pick one thing, one, you know, little highlight that you have here, no dots connect. Like, you had all these dots that just wouldn't connect.
Right.
Like, you didn't even know which way to turn because it hits you in the face.
Yes.
And I think one more thing I would have put in there also is I used to go to the bathroom and throw up a lot.
Really?
Oh, yes. All I'd have to do is see that vision in my head of my husband with a man. And I would just go, and I'd have to run and throw up.
Huh.
I mean, I went through that for so long, and that's what it did
to me. And that's another reason I did this. I had in mind that other people would it would spur them to do their own reality, make it more personal. Because I'd never, you know, at that point when I found out, I had not come to any, and I don't, I'll never know. I didn't think he was actually acting on anything. I thought this was something that had just kind of bubbled up in him, and he was exploring, like, you know, like a man looking at Playboy magazine or something like that. I didn't have that vision of him actually going out and doing anything yet.
Yeah, well, see, I already had the vision. I had not only had the vision, but I also knew, you know.
Right, so that's how our stories are different in that, yeah.
Right, and
yeah.
Everybody's story, like I say, everybody's story is a little bit different,
right.
But it's still all the same.
The feelings are still the same, right?
The emotional, right, the emotional
the
gut-wrenching part,
yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so then that
then
was
once I got those things all came down, I had to start putting one foot in front of the other and dealing with it all, and so I call that surface acceptance, in that I'm accepting that, okay, I'm going to have to go through a divorce. I'm going to have to, you know, we're going to have to start the ball rolling with this. My life is going to change. I was accepting things on the surface, not accepting the deep, heavy, life-changing things yet. Just on the surface, what do I have to do?
Mm-hmm.
So I called that swim so that I don't sink. I'm only swimming just so that I don't sink. It's survival.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, these are some of the things that I had to cope with, having to handle everything, overwhelmed in a new way, making choices alone, dealing with the nitty-gritty of separation and filing for divorce, dealing with accounts, paying the bills, dealing with housing, breaking the news to the kids. That is news of divorce. We didn't tell them their dad was gay for a long time after that. Dissolving the joint account, getting utilities in your name, deciding how to wear your rings, deciding who should and should not know. That was very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
Deciding how much to tell. Attempts to negotiate, trying to, you know, how we're going to do all this, peeling away from him. I think that's such a important visual for people, that you're not just jumping away. You're peeling him off of you because, I mean, we've been together for 23 years, and there's lots of layers, lots of shared experience, and you just have to start the peeling away process, and it takes a long time.
Wendy, would you say about the peeling process that a lot of times people – when you live together for a long period of time, you almost become like so intertwined with each other as a couple that you can't relate to things as a single.
Right. It was very weird.
You know, it's like you're always going places as a family, and even if it's not all, you know, very often, but still people know you as a couple.
Right.
You know, you shop for each other, you know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And we were seen as a perfect family. A perfect family. Looking at all of your belongings in a new way, that's very surreal.
Is that like who's going to get what?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I had to go back and think, okay, what was mine before the marriage and what was his before, you know, all that stuff. Forcing yourself to put one foot in front of the other. Weary of it all, and it's just begun. That is so true.
Because it's so mentally exhausting.
And you know... You know, this is just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just amazing when I look back and see that I survived it. Keeping busy so as not to feel. I wanted to get past feeling upset. I just trying to stay busy. Establishing new routines, taking on more part-time work, which I did, which I still do. Because financially, I took a huge toll, the divorce did on me.
Mm-hmm.
Facing family and close friends, finding a new normal, being careful about keeping kids protected. This is very, very important to me, and I know we talked about it last weekend, too, with the kids. Keeping the kids protected, watching what you say about him in front of the kids. Because you're so raw, and anything can come out of your mouth at any time when you're going through something like this. And but that's not an excuse. You've got to You've got to remember that your children are part, half of their identity is this man.
Mm-hmm.
And their DNA and their blood and their everything that man is them. And as angry and hurt and, you know, disgusted as you are, you cannot badmouth him in front of the kids. You just can't. And depending on what age your kids are, too, I guess. But
I think it doesn't depend what age they are at any age.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Because, you know, they all feel that even if they agree with you 100% that you've been hurt,
right,
that you've been a victim, but when you say that your dad is no good,
right,
what you're saying to them is half of you is no good.
Right, exactly. And being the child development person that I am, I'm particularly sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm such a firm believer in children being sponges and picking up on everything that parent says and does,
mm-hmm,
and how that will affect them to their core and in their future.
And you know what, Wendy? I know it's tough because a lot of times what ends up happening is that children end up blaming their mothers for the divorce.
Right.
Because, first of all, the fathers are saying to them, well, I didn't want a divorce. Your mother wants a divorce.
Right.
You know, I could have stayed in this marriage. I wasn't having any problems. It's your mother who has a problem.
Right.
And, of course, they're not telling the whole truth to the child.
Right.
So, you know, I have women whose children are very angry with them.
Right.
And who feel that they split up the marriage because they're being fed this by the fathers.
Right. And that's just, you've got to use every ounce of whatever you have to be so very careful. And I'm not saying you're not going to mess up,
mm-hmm,
but you've got to keep in mind that they are watching you like hawks. They're hypersensitive because they know something's wrong in the house, you know. And they are watching everything. And I'm not saying to lie to them and say that their father is the most wonderful man in the world, but you have got to be aware of watch what you're saying.
I'm a very big believer in that.
And I'm glad in the long run now, you know, I think
children can decide for themselves later on.
Right.
And they're going to know
I was able to keep a level of class,
mm-hmm,
about it, and you know, your children are also watching how you handle crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hate to say it, but you know, we live in an age now where we're trying to protect our kids to the point where nothing bad will ever happen to them. I have to protect them so nothing bad happens. Well,
mm-hmm,
things are going to happen in your kid's life that are not good, that are crisis or whatever, and they have got to learn how to cope with that. And so they learn that from watching their parents. And so they are watching you handle a crisis. Are you completely falling apart? Are you,
mm-hmm,
getting help for yourself? Are you being rational? You know, all those things they're watching. And so that was a reason when I was in my depression, I went ahead and got medication and got therapy. I mean, that was the scariest thing in my life to have to do that. I had a stereotypical, like everybody else does, about people going to, quote, shrinks, and people are crazy, and, you know, I didn't want to be associated with that. But in the back of my mind, I thought, you know what, my kids are watching how I'm handling myself, and I want them to know that when things aren't good, you've got to get help. And so I did it. And so that's what, when I had to face this divorce, I kept thinking, okay, my kids are watching me, how am I handling this? And I'm being as rational as I possibly can. It's not good, but we will get through it, and it will be better when we get to the other side. You know, that was the kind of the image I had to present to them, because I didn't tell them that their father was gay. I had to explain to them that this marriage was no longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. That was another reason why I felt that I never questioned getting divorced, because at the point that my marriage had deteriorated to such a point that it was a poor model for my kids. And I had to keep thinking about that do I really want my daughter to see that this is what a marriage is like, that this is what a wife should put up with? No, I don't want my daughter to think that. And also with my son. Do I want my son to think that this is what a marriage should be, where the man runs the show, but he's not there, and the woman succumbs to everything? Because that's what I was doing. And I think that's what gave me the energy to get through it and to get out, and because I felt that I was a model to my kids. And, you know, I'm not perfect by any means, and my kids, you know, are definitely scarred by all this. But, you know, in the end, I feel like I did handle it with class and dignity, and I think my kids got that message.
Well, I think the other factor is also, Wendy, that aside from the fact that by, you know, father bashing, you know, you're hurting them, which, you know, I always used to say that I used to bite my tongue so much till it swelled out of my mouth.
Yes.
But, you know, I try to always make my children feel good about themselves by saying good things about their dad.
Right.
Until they were old enough to, you know, make up their own minds on situations.
Right.
But the gay thing is so important, and I tell this to women, I just can't emphasize it enough, that if you start talking bad about gay, and I understand every second why you might be feeling that at the moment.
Right.
And I always say, if that's where you stand, you come to the chat room, you can vent all you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can write to me, and I'll, you know, validate whatever you're feeling. But in front of your children, what people have to realize is that when you have a gay husband, you have double the chance of having a gay child.
Yes.
And that gay child's going to find that, feel bad enough about himself or herself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start bashing the gay, they're going to think you're bashing them.
That is very true.
And you're going to end up having a self-fulfilling prophecy of now your child going and running and hiding.
Yes.
And leading a tortured life, you know, and marrying somebody.
Yep.
And that's just the reality. So, you know, by alienating your children away from gay, when that might be their sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't met the woman yet, no matter how upset she is about the betrayal in her own marriage, who ever said to me ever that if my son or daughter were gay, then I would, you know, disown them.
Right.
I've never had one woman ever say that to me.
Right.
They always say to me, if my child is gay, I'll love them and I'll accept them.
Right.
But if they feel that you won't because
you're
sitting and bashing gay, then they're just going to feel even worse than they already feel.
That's right. And unfortunately, we live in a society that, still can't get it. So, yeah, that's a very important point that we need to bear in mind with kids. So I'm sorry I got sidetracked, but I got on my soapbox with kids. So.
Oh, that's fine.
The other thing in that second phase is a lot of resentment. I had a lot of resentment in my whole marriage, but resentment about everything. Now it was notched up, you know, ratcheted up because, you know, how dare this happen, but I'm the one having to put everything in motion because he was just kind of sitting there in denial. And looking forward with dread because I knew it was just not going to be fun, not going to be easy. I knew nothing about the court system. I really didn't think I was going to be able to make it on my own financially, but I knew I had to get out and I had to just kind of have faith that I would somehow make it. So that was the second phase. The third phase.
And that lasted about a year,
right? Yeah, I was going through all the junk with the divorce now. You know, some of you know, some of you don't know that in the middle of all this, he got himself arrested at a roadside park. And this was just total shock for somebody who's fine, upstanding, you know, teacher to even put himself at risk like that and put all of us at risk is just unimaginable.
I can't even imagine.
Unimaginable. Totally just put me into it. I mean, I thought I was already had plenty to deal with, but putting that on top of it was just unspeakable. And it did, you know, motivate me to move faster and realize that I really needed to get out, but it was just so darn confusing, and I won't go into all that detail, but it drew up my son got drugged through a lot of it because my husband was my son's teacher at school during that time period, and so he was put on leave of absence until the court went through, and just a lot of junk, but it just was a whole nother dimension to this mess that I just never dreamed I'd have to get through.
Mm-hmm.
So But it did motivate me to move, to keep moving. So, you know, in some ways, that was good, I guess. Then I'm into the next phase, which I called wrestling with reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the other term for that is the mountain is still there to climb. Okay, so now I've been a year and a half dealing with all this, and there's still stuff I haven't dealt with. So the reality of it all is sinking in, yet there's still so much that has to be dealt with. So this is what, and I called that also having to think. Instead of just surviving, now I have to really, really deal with some things.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, is this all there is? Okay, I got through it. I got the divorce, and now, you know, this is it. You know, because what motivated me to get through it was there will be something better on the other side, and there really wasn't for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Pressure to be over it. I know you've talked about that a lot. People feeling like, okay, you're divorced now, you know, everything's
going
to
be good.
Yeah,
I mean, why can't you just move on and forget it? Everybody,
right.
You know, half the
and
world gets
family's
divorced.
Not, my family was not rallying around me as much either.
Mm-hmm.
I'm weary from stage two. And ready to go back. That was an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
You sit there and go, you know, maybe, you know, it was better when we were married. Maybe that was better. Maybe I shouldn't have done this. And that was very odd to me, but it does make sense. I mean, maybe I could have, because you start to forget some of the day-to-day stuff that drove you crazy,
mm-hmm.
and the rejection and all that. You forget all that, and so then you think, well, maybe it wasn't so bad. Maybe I should have gone back.
Not only that, but, you know, when a lot of women have told me that when they're going through this, and now all of a sudden they're responsible for taking care of the children,
yes.
they're responsible for the finances in the family,
mm-hmm.
they're responsible for
mm-hmm.
the day-to-day running, mm-hmm. going, and doing
yes.
everything on their own, that, you know, it's such a hardship, as sometimes
mm-hmm.
just the thought of going back, not that it was great when you were there,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it's less scary than doing it yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely, exactly. And that's what I was trying to say there, is that I'd like to go back to how it was, but just have him not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right, we fantasize over, you
yes,
know, what could
exactly,
be.
Exactly, exactly. I was stuck, but I had no roadmap to follow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what the future, you know, what to do now. What do I do now? Uncertainty, which way is forward? I remember this. My anger resurfaced. I don't want this new life. I don't want him to see me dealing with it. I don't want him to think he's off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that so vividly. I wanted him to realize that I was still suffering, which he never will. But the sadness resurfaced. Maybe there'll never be someone, a partner. Wasted time. I have never really been loved. Fear of the unknown. Question, do I tell the kids the whole truth or not? Who should be the one to tell them?
Mm-hmm.
Do I tell others of the past, others of the future? What do I say? Heavier questions that were allowed to be put off earlier, I now have. Should I sell the house and downsize? Should I change careers to earn more money? Now what? Some of the bad stuff has faded. Almost tempted to go back. It would be easier in some ways. I remember those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You're lonely, but you're afraid to get out there. Trying to move forward, but it's so hard sometimes. That was another year.
Mm-hmm.
Year or two, I'd say. Just, you know, you get through, but, you know, Prince Charming doesn't walk in the door by any means, and you're still having to deal with everything.
And even if Prince Charming stepped in the room, you're not ready to see him
exactly.
anyway.
Exactly. And it's a good thing Prince Charming did not step in the room, because you are so tempted to jump that would not be good.
Right. You're
that
vulnerable, and
good.
When any predator would come along, you're
exactly.
you're ripe for the picking.
Exactly. So thankfully that didn't happen. Then at the time that I wrote this, I kind of projected what the next phase would be. either titled Acceptance or Becoming Whole or Moving On or Conquering the Mountain. And then I put in there, it may include acceptance of self, acceptance of circumstances, making peace with the past, having new goals, having less pain and more joy, having contentment, giving back, paying forward, the help and support that I had received along the way, disclosure with my nearly adult children, which I have done, self-sufficiency, feminine spirit restored or being revived, still working on that,
mm-hmm.
Finding new hobbies and interests, and or revisiting old ones, feeling whole, lighter steps, looking back with satisfaction, finding a new partner, trusting myself. So I'm still in that phase, I would say. Some things I'm doing better than others. So it's 3 years after I found out is when I told my kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrestled with that a lot, but I just could not keep a secret from them anymore. Again, thinking, you know, if they found out, how could I? I didn't want to be seen as not being honest with them. I mean, honesty is a real important thing that I want to teach my kids. So I wrestled with that for a really long time of what to do and how to tell them. He did not want me to tell him at all, and I decided that I needed to tell him. I was about to have surgery. Didn't ever know if I was going to come through surgery, which I did, obviously. But when things like that happen, you start going, you know what? I want them to hear the story from me,
mm-hmm.
Not anybody else. So that was motivating to me. And I just happened that they were both home and sat them down. And, boy, they thought I had cancer or something. They just looked at me like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, And while I was going through the whole divorce, it was killing me that I could not tell my side of the story because, as you said, my son especially was mad at me because I was the one that filed. I was the one that kicked him out. You know, they were mad. And it made me so mad that I couldn't tell my friends, I couldn't tell anybody the real reason for the divorce.
Right, and we start living their secret. And, you know, they're out of the closet. They're out there doing their thing,
yeah.
But we're stuck in that closet because
yeah.
they don't want us telling anybody.
Yeah, and the resentment was just was so maddening. But then the thought of telling them and having all the gossip, you know, I couldn't deal with that either. So I felt so much better after I told my kids. And they took it fine. You know, again, I had been very careful about how I spoke of their dad, so the conversation was very dignified, and I didn't get into details of how I found out. I didn't want them having that image of their father sitting in front of a computer, so I just kind of smoothed over that and just said that's what he was, and they immediately put it all together. They were 20 and 8, let's see, 8, 6, 17, 18, and 20,
mm-hmm.
21, you know, they said, aha, now we understand the arrest, and, you know, they put all that together, but they did not want anyone to know. They wanted to keep it to themselves.
And that's fine, but I feel that children have the
right,
to know, and
right.
not only, I'm going to tell you a couple of reasons why I believe that now, and I didn't used to always think it. I used
right.
to say, well, there are times when they don't have to really know, like during
right.
their adolescence, why ruin it for them?
Right.
The truth of the matter is that many kids already know.
Right.
And they become the keeper of the secret.
Right.
And they feel if they let this out, then their parents are going to split up and they're going to cause the divorce of their parents.
Right.
They know their father, they're looking at gay porno or they see that he's going out or, you know, chatting on chats or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all computer savvy and technical today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they feel, well, I'm keeping this from my poor mother. She's so unhappy.
I can't imagine.
And I can't tell her why because then she's going to really go off the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why so many young adults are so screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
I say, tell the children. They don't have to understand sexual factors. they can just understand that some people are born differently.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of men and women always liking each other, there are some people where men like men and women like women.
Right.
And
right.
it's not that they want to be born like that. They're just born differently.
Right.
And, you know, when I broke to my child, because somebody sent me this letter yesterday, how can I tell them?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, you have to find some positive gay role models, which is really hard when you're feeling hatred.
Right.
But, you know, I looked for people that we knew, you know, because I had a lot of gay friends that my children knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I just simply told them, you know, they were 12 and maybe 10 at the time,
mm-hmm.
or 12 and 13. You know, and I said, some people are born tall, some are born short.
Right.
Some have blue eyes, some have brown
right.
eyes, yellow hair, blonde
right.
hair, dark hair. Some are straight. Most people are straight, but some are born gay.
Right.
And I said, they have no choice. You know, but mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't know it till they're older, because sometimes it doesn't come out till later.
Right.
So they wouldn't ask me, well, how come I didn't know this before?
Right.
And, you know, that's how I said that. You know, Dad was born differently. He didn't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because he doesn't love us. He didn't have a
right.
choice.
Right.
So I try to be sensitive about it.
Right. And my kids were very understanding that he had to be secretive about it, because they knew his mother, their grandmother, what she was like and how judgmental she was.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very sympathetic to his plight, you know, and sad for him that he had to grow up that way, thinking that he couldn't be who he really was.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they were okay with all that. And what they told me was what upset them the most about their dad was the fact that he ignored them and abandoned them as children had nothing to do with the gay part of it. They were okay with the gay part. It was the other part.
It was the other part. And a lot of times it is.
And,
you know,
and they understood how that all wove together. You
mm-hmm.
know, they were old enough to understand that. And, you know, I really haven't talked to them about it since.
Mm-hmm.
The things that bug them about their dad are quirky things about him, and his self-absorption more than anything else. And I really think that he is not, I think he's back in the closet after what happened to him and what he went through and almost lost his career and everything else. I really don't think he's out there doing anything, and maybe he is, but he's sure making it look like he's not. So
at least to you,
at least to me, right?
Wendy,
and,
let me ask you something. I had one of our listeners just send me a couple emails.
Okay.
His name's Fred Martin Del Campo, and
okay.
Fred, you know, is a really big supporter of our network.
Okay.
And in fact, he's the person who translated my first book into Spanish.
Oh, wow.
Yes, he's really a wonderful dear friend, or became a dear friend to me. And he grew up in a very abusive family also.
Hmm.
But he had this question, do you have any lingering bitterness against gay people in general? Or was it just your husband that affected your life and the memory of him will always mar your existence? Or has she grown as a person in comprehension for weak-willed or sexually traumatized people like her ex-husband? But I guess, you know, did you have any bitterness when it comes to gay?
No, I really do not.
And
I never had that.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, before you even knew from gay husband.
No, my parents never discussed it, I don't know where this all came from, but I never doubted that it was a biological thing, and I never had a negative thought about it. I really never did. And so, you know, as you say, Bonnie, we have no problem with the gay part. It's the part, you know, the marrying. And I really truly think that my husband really thought that marrying me would cure him. I really do sincerely think that he went into the marriage thinking that whatever he was fantasizing about would go away. I will give him that. You
mm-hmm.
know. The resentment that I have for him was more of the narcissism and the ignoring and the, not answering my questions, or, you know, I would write him letters like, what is going on? You know, please help me, you know, this marriage isn't working. I can't understand what, you know, he wouldn't give me anything. Mm. And he would basically blow me off. That was the stuff that I resented.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem. I think it's very sad that he can't be who he is, and I have implored him to get help to deal with that, because I think he still has a lot of shame about
mm-hmm.
it. And in my story I write about, he did have other colleagues that were gay, and I knew of them, and they all had partners, and it was always just a very accepted thing. He never bashed them. He never said anything that, you know, I know some gay people put on this homophobic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was never that way. So it was always very accepting, and I have no problem. I think it's a shame that our society cannot get over this.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear that we have is just ridiculous. This whole fear of gay marriage and what it's going to do to our world, I just don't understand why people can think that way. I don't want to get into politics, but, you know, I'm floored that some people can say things and people believe them now, still in 2012.
I know. Even in this day and age, I was having this conversation today with young relatives that I have who are really religious. And, you know, mm-hmm. even they agreed with me that, you know, these people are just so stuck, and they come from a very religious community.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what religion you are, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But I have, you know, people writing to me who are Christians,
mm-hmm.
Muslims,
mm-hmm.
Hindus, anybody mm-hmm. who has any kind of strong religious, you know, a lot of times, you know, fundamentalism kinds of,
mm-hmm.
you know, approaches to life,
mm-hmm.
this is going to be hurting. I do want to tell you, by the way, we had a really nice note from Kate, who was listening, and she said, can you send me Wendy's list? I'm listening to the radio show now. I can't stop nodding my head in agreement to the feelings in phase one.
Oh, my.
And Kate's just going through this, but, you know, she just started a few weeks ago, so that's
okay.
Why she wanted to
hear
you.
Okay, well, good luck to Kate.
Yep, Kate's a very strong woman. She's going to make it just fine.
You will make it.
I think that, you know, when women read your list, in fact, I already sent it out to her as we're talking, so she'll have it in her hand.
Good.
And any other women who want a copy of Wendy's list. And by the way, this is how I get Wendy to keep coming back, because Wendy has more lists that we didn't have time to go through tonight that you'll love hearing.
That
this is how I sucker Wendy into the show. But, you know, if anybody would like Wendy's list, please write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to give it to you. And, Wendy, I think that you have been so therapeutic for me, and I never said that really to anybody, but I'm telling
wow.
you the truth.
Wow.
You know, your words just rock me. I mean, they move me.
Wow. I don't know what to say.
Well, I'm telling you the truth. And not only, you know, your lists, which to me are just amazing, and everybody who sends their information, which is, I guess, close to 80 to 100 women each week.
Wow.
I send them your list.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets it. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, with all my information, your lists
mm-hmm.
are included.
Mm-hmm.
So that women can have a kind of, you know, outlook on what's going to be happening, how they're
mm-hmm.
feeling,
mm-hmm.
what to expect. And mm-hmm. I always hear such wonderful things about your list on how helpful they are to women.
I'm so glad. I had no idea when I just did it for myself to get myself sorted out. And this is beyond my expectation. You know, I didn't really have an expectation, but I'm so glad to hear that it's helpful, and I hope that it inspires people to do their own, you know, soul searching, if you will.
And not only that,
but
like you
were
just saying, with the list, you know, you can add stuff on. Like I thought of new things tonight
to help you cope with what you're dealing with.
Exactly. You know, put down your feelings, because
right.
Wendy articulates all of hers, and all of hers are ours, but you may have a few extra, like
right.
I did.
Right.
Like, remember the
right.
one I added? Vomiting.
Right.
That's a really good one, right?
Exactly.
So you may have other feelings
also,
like that.
Well, also, you know, when we were talking about not bashing the husband, I mean, journaling and writing is a really good way
to
get all that yuck out of your system, but not have the kids hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still doing that.
Wendy, just talk for a couple of minutes before we have to end about your other list.
Okay.
And then you'll come back and promise me, right?
Yes. Well, what I did when I'm thinking about, and, you know, I hear from you the women that are in the beginning and they're just so stuck and I don't even know what to do and I don't know what side's up or down or what to do. There's so many things that are so overwhelming that I came up with a list of things that, right now I cannot do certain things, but maybe there are some things that I can do.
Can you give us an example?
So the first thing I have is right now I can't get out of this hole I am in. Well, that's true. You can't get out of this hole that I'm in. But perhaps I can stop digging the hole deeper.
Wow.
Perhaps I can decide that I want to get out of the hole. Perhaps I can make a plan of baby steps.
Uh-huh.
So even though you can't get out of this hole, you can't, don't sit there helpless. You can, there are some things you can do.
Right.
And so that's the whole gist of this, is to start thinking about, and I was really inspired by someone on our retreat who was feeling this. I could really sense that there's just so much going on, I don't know what to do, and I think this really fits her. Another thing, right now I can't trust him, and that is, boy, is that the truth. You cannot trust him. But what can you do? Perhaps I can start paying attention better. I can try looking objectively at what he says and does.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I can stop expecting him to be honest and trustworthy.
Wow.
To avoid disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
You can't trust him, so you stop expecting him to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I can start trusting my own instincts. I can't trust him, but perhaps I can stop giving him opportunities to be deceptive. I found this with mine. It is easier to lie when you're given a question that requires a yes or no answer.
Mm-hmm.
So don't give him those kind of questions.
Right. Don't give him that opportunity.
Yeah.
Make him answer.
And another thing I had to do, I couldn't trust him, but I said to write down facts that I might have to refer to later. Things he would say, things he would do, kind of creating a paper trail for down the line when you're dealing with a divorce lawyer, you start writing things down. I can take care of my own business. I can't trust him, but I can take care of my own business. So it kind of helps you get a focus.
Yes. Now, Wendy, when will you have that list complete by?
I have it. It's ready to go.
Okay, great. So once again, you know, I would like to feature that for our newsletter.
Okay.
And then maybe, if you don't mind, in May when I'm focusing on women.
Okay.
You know, coming back on the show again.
Okay.
And then we'll go through that list and we'll give our women, you know, a chance to see the list.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that'll be so exciting. So you and I will set up the date.
Okay.
And I'll let everybody know when I send out the newsletter what date you'll be back.
Okay.
And Wendy, I can't thank you enough for doing our show tonight.
You're very welcome.
You know, it's funny because Miss B had previous, you know, plans for tonight, and I said to her, "Don't worry, I have Wendy coming."
I can talk. I am good at that. I will say that.
Now, Wendy, it's not a matter of what you can talk and say. It's not a matter that you can talk. It's what you have to say. Even if you talk for 2 minutes, the value in being able to articulate these concepts are just so valuable to so many of our women.
Well, I'm so glad that I can give back, because you have given me so much to help me survive that I'm glad I can finally give it back.
Oh, and you're giving it and giving it, so I can't wait to get the next list to go over with everybody.
Okay.
And
alrighty.
To all our women, we thank you for listening in. And if you have any questions for Wendy, feel free to write to me at bondk@aol.com. And I'll be more than happy to forward them over to Wendy,
certainly,
and she will respond
certainly
to you.
Glad to help.
Wendy, I love you.
I love you too, my dear.
All right. And love to all of our women who are listening. And we'll be back again with you next week. And
have
a great week. You too.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.